Yle Podcast.
Hello and welcome to All Points North. It's the show that puts the aggressive seagull into your quality terrace time. This week we're chewing over higher education, Finland and the EU, and academic plagiarism among the political elite.
This is the All Points North podcast, telling you everything you need to know about Finland this week.
Hello, everyone who's listening, whether you're at work like us or choosing to take a long weekend. I'm Denise Wall, and my co-presenter this week is Egan Richardson. Nice to see you, Egan.
Thanks, Denise. It's wonderful to be here as ever.
Did you have a good week, Egan?
It's been amazing. I've loved every second of it, and I'm not at all annoyed that I didn't book this Friday off to create a four-day weekend.
Okay, no more moaning. Our guest this week is Mikko Kiesilainen, who heads up the Libera think tank and is not taking the day off as well. Welcome, Mikko.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Now, Mikko, first question I have for you is, how do you feel about these weekday bank holidays? Are they a waste of time? Do they damage productivity? Or should we move them all to Mondays or Fridays to make everyone's lives easier?
I would be all in favor of moving them either to Fridays or Mondays, or even better, let people choose when they want to have holidays by themselves.
It's a very liberal point.
I am a very liberal person in general, but I think especially also taking into the fact that these are usually placed based on kind of religious holidays.
Yes.
So I think it's a bit old-fashioned, in my opinion.
Liberal and progressive. I like that. Now, according to your website, Libera is a think tank that supports and advances individual liberty, free enterprise, free markets, and a free society. You have some heavy hitters behind you, including Björn Walrus, Anne Berner, and Elina Lepomäki, to name a few. And they're basically powerful people in very influential positions. Would you say you're representing the established power structures here in Finland?
We promote liberal values, and we welcome everyone who shares this kind of value-based agenda to work with us. And we aim to be kind of party independent, so we have people involved from all different kind of backgrounds. Up until last year, we also had Suvianne Siimes on our board, who is a former chairman of the Left Alliance.
Mm. Okay.
Okay, so this week you published a pamphlet on higher education.
That's right.
One of the recommendations was that Finland gets rid of entrance exams. Now, for people listening who might not be familiar with it, Finland has a lot of entrance exams to different departments in different universities all over the country. And this is quite unique in international comparison. And it does add to the burden for individual students and kind of narrows the pool of applicants. But those tests, on the other hand, those tests do offer a second chance to people who might not have worked that hard in high school. So why shouldn't they get an opportunity?
I think there has to be always an opportunity for those people who did not really pay attention to grades in school. And we also offer that in our pamphlet, saying that there should be more slots at the Open University, where you can show that if you do well on the studies related to that program you want to get into, those good grades could be a way of getting into that university program that you want. And also, there's nothing limiting you from redoing your high school exams if you want to get better grades in that. And also, we promote the use of kind of standardized testing in general, for example, SATs or GMAT type of standardized exams.
Okay, because I come from a different country. I come from the UK, where entrance exams have a bad rep. I mean, they are seen as...
For a good reason.
Maybe, I don't know. But I try to understand the Finnish point of view as well. In England, they're seen as kind of restricting access because people need to have time and resources to prepare for a specific exam, and that favours people of a certain social status and social classes. But Finns see themselves as extremely egalitarian, and they're very proud of their education system. So how do these two things square up? Can you help explain this to me?
I think the critique that's been put forward against the entrance exams in the UK is point on. And I think that also applies to the Finnish entrance exams. But for some reason, Finns haven't traditionally accepted that critique, even though I think it's completely true. There's this kind of illusion that once you get into the exam room, the exam is exactly the same for everyone, so it must be egalitarian. but it doesn't take into account that people from different backgrounds have hugely different chances of preparing for that exam. And some of the coaching programs for these entrance exams can cost up to thousands of euros. It's obvious that not everyone can afford that, but there is no scholarship for these preparation programs like you have for tuition fees.
Do you think this is a broader misconception in Finland, maybe, that Finns sometimes don't see the structures, the class or power structures that actually exist?
Yeah, I think that there's a very high focus that things have to be kind of formally egalitarian. The exam has to be exactly the same for everyone, and it's really important that you can't get like a subjective valuation of the applications, and I think that misses out on a lot of the other criteria that should be taken into account when thinking whether something is actually equal or not.
Now, one of the things that your think tank talks about is wanting to abolish the distinction between universities and the so-called universities of applied sciences. Why is that?
I think, the basic idea between all of these suggestions that we have in this pamphlet is that they're all related to this Bologna process, which is this kind of European process to harmonize higher education systems across the European countries. And the thing that was taken into as an example to start this harmonization was the British system. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very good system, and there is no distinction between kind of different quality universities and universities of applied sciences.
Is there a distinction between the quality, though, here in Finland, between the universities of applied sciences and the more traditional universities?
There's kind of a different, they say that there's a different focus for them, but I think there should be a more freer competitions and not kind of a categorical categorization of them into two separate classes. I think that's artificial, and it doesn't really give the equal chances for the people who have graduated from the University of Applied Sciences.
In terms of, let's say, the job market, or once students graduate, prospective employers, how do they view graduates from a University of Applied Science and as opposed to graduates from a traditional university? Is one better than the other?
I think there is this kind of categorical differentiation, so that there are many jobs where you have to be from one category of institution or another, and they won't even consider applicants from the other category, and I think that's just silly.
Okay.
One last question on higher education. You didn't study in Finland.
No.
So do you think that's a strength when you're analysing these things, or a strength in general in Finnish working life, or is it a weakness?
Well, in writing this pamphlet, it was definitely a strength. I had something to compare the Finnish system to. But in general, I think there are very few employers who understand systems outside of Finland. And those few employers get top talent from prestigious international universities. But in general, I think that's limited to a very few employers in this country.
Okay. Now, I just want to ask about the upcoming reform of health and social care, because it seems to be a very painful experience and painful process. Now, you've lived in Britain, which has a much-loved and basically socialist system of healthcare called the NHS, which is actually slightly cheaper than Finland's current system as a proportion of GDP. So why doesn't Finland just copy that? Why don't we bring the NHS to Finland?
That's a very good question. I think the NHS was a very impressive system. When I was living there, I got to know the system, how it works, and it worked very well from the point of view of the patient. And I'm surprised that there hasn't been more discussion in Finland of having that kind of a system in Finland. I'm surprised that none of the, for example, Social Democrats or the Left Alliance have not suggested that we should copy that system of healthcare. And I think it comes down to the fact that the Finnish system sees the municipalities' autonomy as extremely important. Okay. And I think that's the reason why this kind of like a government-led system has not caught on.
Okay. I see.
And that's enshrined in the Constitution, actually.
Yeah.
So it's very easy for any new proposal to run up against the constitutional issue and then fall flat as a result.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to go?
You have something else? Go ahead.
I was going to go. There's an opinion piece today in Marcel and Televice, which very quickly we'll talk about this, on the EU budget negotiations, suggesting that basically the Liberals in Finland are the only political forces who don't want the farmers to get more money, plentiful subsidies for everybody involved in agriculture. So ahead of the EU budget negotiations, the paper Marcel and Televice, which is for our listeners, the future of the countryside, I guess that's the name of the paper. Mm. Very big paper, very popular in rural areas. It's concerned about a possible reduction in EU subsidies for farmers, especially after Brexit happens and the EU budget possibly shrinks. So why don't you want farmers to get more subsidies? Why do you want them to make do with less?
I think the main issue is that Finland pays more agricultural subsidies than any other country in the world. That's the starting point. And what we should do, we should definitely pay less agricultural subsidies. The farmers in Finland, they get the EU subsidies, and on top of that, they get the national subsidies. And within the EU framework, of course, we need to get all the money that we can get from the EU to this country. Mm-hmm. But when we are discussing the rules by which we allocate the EU money, we should be thinking that, okay, maybe all EU countries should get maybe less agricultural subsidies.
Do you think it's right that the agriculture minister gets €116,000 in farm subsidies?
I think that's a travesty. I think there's a huge a conflict of interest with when the minister of agriculture gets more money from subsidies than he gets from the job as a minister.
Okay, I wonder if he's listening. Let's move on. On Wednesday, Finland celebrated Europe Day, the anniversary of a speech that paved the way for the European Union. In honor of that occasion, we sent our reporter Ronan Brown out to find out what Finns think about the Union today.
Finland joined the EU in 1995, and by now the initial infatuation has worn off a little. But when I asked students and staff at Jyväskylä University, I found there was still strong support for the Union.
Since Finland is a small country in Europe and in EU. So if we want to make our voice clear, we must shout really loud, since Germany and France, for example, as a bigger countries, have more power in Europe's Union.
Well, I don't have any strong opinions, but I think that it has been a good thing. I think it makes everything easier.
In wider sense, I'm not so sure that the EU we applied into in the first place is the kind of thing that we got now going on due to the rapid expansion and numerous challenges that EU has been facing ever since.
They're not unusual in their EU enthusiasm. Researcher Sonja Alapiha says that many demographics remain positive about the EU, but in recent years a more Eurosceptic tone has entered the debate.
You could say that majority of Finnish people really like the fact that we are part of this larger community. And according to studies, the social demographic factors really play a part here. I mean, if you look at how young people view the membership, they are generally quite positive. And also the level of education is linked to the way in which people see the EU. And also you can see that there are differences in areas in which people live. Like southern Finnish people are quite positive in terms of the EU compared to other parts of Finland. But I would say that Eurozone crisis was a game changer. I mean, in how Finnish people discuss EU affairs and politicians discuss EU affairs. And the EU and Eurozone were the key themes in 2011 parliamentary elections, which really, in my point of view, politicized the question of EU integration, and EU debates became an integral part of parliamentary plenary sessions and media, and also online.
Finland's current Minister for European Affairs, as well as Culture and Sport, is Sampo Terho. And he explains how his opinions of the EU have evolved over time.
Personally, I have gone all the way from a very positive European and EU enthusiast at a young age to very critical EU minister at an older age, and especially 4 years that I spent in the European Parliament changed my views, that I became more critical all in all, especially because of the reasons I mentioned, the concentration of power and the the overextended amount of regulation that EU does.
However, despite his criticisms, the minister does not believe that a fix-it, a Finnish exit from the EU, similar to the UK's Brexit, is currently a viable option.
Not at the moment, no, I would not. We must fight for better EU, not to get out of the EU. Because at the moment, Finland would be in a very peculiar international position if we decided to exit. Finland would be on line with those non-NATO members that are on the border of Russia, and it's not probably the international group that we want to be combined with in this sense. I still support Finland being in the EU, but very much influencing against turning EU into a federal state.
And that was Ronan Brown, and you just heard from Sampo Terho, who is the chair of the Blue Reform Group in the Parliament, and they were talking about the European Union. Mikko, what are your thoughts? Should Finland stay inside the Union and fix it, or should they leave like the Brits did and fix it?
I think Finland should definitely be a member of the European Union. I think it's definitely in Finland's best interest to be in the Union and make the best out of it.
I just wanted to ask about, I mean, the high-profile Brexiteer Daniel Hannan said recently that Brexit isn't quite happening the way he expected. He thought, obviously, it would be much smoother and better and there would be jam for everybody immediately. But do you think this kind of slow-motion car crash unfolding in Britain has put people in other countries off the prospect of leaving the EU, and it's kind of immunised other countries against this idea?
To some extent, yeah. I think the fact that nobody seems to know in the UK politics what exactly is going to happen is definitely putting other countries off of the idea that should we have hold a referendum on the leaving the European Union. It's definitely not going very well for the UK at the moment. Mm. So I think it's definitely holding people down.
What about here in Finland? At some point, there seemed to have been some appetite, and we heard from Sampo Terho, who was saying, no, we don't want to be grouped with the fringe people there who are not EU skeptics, as they call them now. Do you think that debate in Finland has now been settled to some extent?
I think at least for the time being, until we see how the Brexit thing folds out. I think before that we know what the outcome is, I don't think anyone is going to be actively saying that we should hold our own referendum on the topic.
Okay. And of course, if you want to read more about how Finns view Europe Day and the EU in general, you can head on over to our website for more detail at yle.fi/news.
And now it's time to hear from our audience. One of the big stories this week has been Finns Party MP Laura Huhtasaari's master's thesis, which was found to be massively plagiarised by an Yle investigation. That prompted a vigorous debate on social media, including on our Facebook page. Leonard Rotic said that she should be made to pay all the money she has gotten through employment or otherwise, considering her master's degree got her hired. Jayendra Patel asks, what was the university doing? University personnel should have checked it at the time. Of course, she has used a shortcut, so she is the main culprit. So, Mikko, how is it possible that a student can get away with such blatant plagiarism? I mean, does the university, in this case, Jyväskylä University, does it have questions to answer on this?
Well, this thesis was submitted in 2001, and back then I don't think they had automatic software which you could use to check for plagiarism. These days, I think all the Finnish universities use as a standard procedure that you have to put the thesis through this automatic software that checks whether it's plagiarized or not. But these theses that have been submitted before this kind of software was in use, I think it's impossible for the universities to make sure that this kind of plagiarism doesn't happen. And I think it's definitely the responsibility and the fault lies with Laura Huhtasaari here, not with the University of Jyväskylä. Where I do think there is some liability with the University of Jyväskylä is that they did do this kind of check when this this kind of news first surfaced mm-hmm. that this might be plagiarized. They did have this kind of internal study whether this is true or not. And they did not even notice all those cases of plagiarism which had been written on these kind of internet forums. And I think that kind of throws in a question of that how competent was this study that if they don't even notice what's available on a kind of discussion forums, then I think that should have been done. They should have done a better job in the first study.
Mm-hmm. Is it a disqualifying crime, this, from high office?
I think it should be, absolutely. I think it shows a clear dishonesty from a politician that they plagiarized their master's thesis. So I think, in my opinion, she should not be able to continue in politics.
But do you think she will?
I'm sorry.
I think absolutely she will.
Okay.
Well, okay. On that point, do you think that people like Huhtasaari and maybe other people in high office are being held to the same standard of accountability as would an ordinary Jane or Joe? I mean, if I had applied for a job and cited my thesis as evidence that I was competent for the position and it was then found that I'd plagiarized the thesis, I think I'd be out the door pretty quickly. Yet here we have someone in politics who is entrusted with the welfare of the people, sort of getting a not even a slap on the wrist, but
I think,
essentially a free pass.
For any kind of formal procedure involving a member of the parliament is very difficult based on this the kind of plagiarism, because she has received the number of votes to get into the parliament and she does have a mandate from the people. So she definitely cannot be put out of office of the member of the parliament, and it's up to the electorate to see whether she's able to continue as a member of the parliament after the next election. But I don't think she should be a minister or anything like that. In other countries, such as in Germany, we've seen these kind of cases where ministers have been called for plagiarism in their academic career, and they have been forced to leave the minister's post after these have surfaced. And I think that's a fair practice in those cases.
Yeah. Would you, if you hired someone and then found out they'd done this, would you fire them?
That would depend a lot on what they were working on. I mean, if they were working on something that doesn't really require this kind of trust and academic skill, then not necessarily. I mean, it depends hugely on what they're doing.
So the issue of dishonesty that you raise is not a disqualifying factor?
It depends on what the person is doing. If they're working as a some manual job in McDonald's, I don't see why that would be a major factor.
Okay.
If you have something on your mind, just send your audio message to our All Points North WhatsApp account. Our WhatsApp number is +358 44 421 0909. Tell us what's on your mind, and your comment or question might be heard on our next show.
Now it's time for our roundup of the main stories in Finland this week. First up, a man known as a serial strangler has been arrested on suspicion of murder after a woman's body was found in Helsinki last Friday. Helsinki police on Tuesday asked the court to remand in custody Mikael Pentila on suspicion of murder. Pentila has served time for three previous killings and was released from prison in late 2016.
And prosecutors are considering charges against four people suspected of discriminating against a Finnish-Russian dual national during a recruitment process. Police say that the four suspects may have discriminated against the woman since she was not hired, and it was allegedly due to her Finnish-Russian dual nationality.
A man who killed a woman and injured several other people in a hit-and-run incident is to receive mental health care instead of a jail term. A psychiatric assessment found that the suspect was not responsible for his actions. The defendant admitted to aggravated manslaughter, 5 counts of aggravated causation of personal injury, and aggravated reckless driving.
Moving on to other news, the 160-year-old Swedish-speaking gentlemen's club Handelsgille may be changing its rules to admit female members. Former club chair Brur Krause has supported changing the group's charter to include women. Earlier this year, another posh men-only space, the Helsinki Burs Club, also came under fire for its ban on women.
And from an all-male space to an all-female one, plans to open a women-only island resort in Finland's southwestern archipelago are still moving ahead. German-American entrepreneur Christina Roth said the resort will open next month as planned. However, she's scrapping plans to make further investments in Finland. Earlier this week, Roth told business daily Kauppalehti that Finland was a negative country that sucks energy and money. Roth said she plans to focus on projects in the Caribbean. Wow. Wouldn't we all?
In health news, it turns out that quitting alcohol could prevent up to 13,000 cancer cases in Finland over the next 30 years. That's according to a study published in a medical journal this week. The research suggests that teetotaling would lead to 23% fewer cases of esophageal cancer. It would also prevent some 5,000 instances of breast cancer and 3,200 cancers of the mouth and throat.
The Raksila Swimming Hall in Oulu has taken a step towards solving the mystery of a serial defecator who has managed to shut the facility on 4 occasions in the last month by evacuating his bowels in the pool. Each time stools are seen in the water, the pool must be emptied and cleaned, with the community locked out for 5 to 6 hours at a stretch. It's a severe inconvenience for the locals, and now Oulu has had enough. Municipal bosses have made a formal police complaint over the matter.
I never thought I'd hear evacuating his bowels in a news broadcast.
That's the first time for everything.
But anyway, on a completely unrelated note, Finland's Eurovision representative Saara Aalto has made it into the final round of the televised pop contest. The grand final takes place tomorrow in Lisbon. Aalto, who competed in the UK version of X Factor, was selected without a public competition. And don't forget, you can read up on these and other stories on our website at wiley.fi/news. But it's that time of week again. That's all we've got time for. We'll be back again next week with another edition of All Points North. Until then, I'm off to prepare for Eurovision, the vigil, with some much needed rest. Egan, what are you planning for your time off? Do you have plans for Mother's Day?
Thanks for reminding me. Yeah, I do now. Before that, I may watch some football with the Finnish Cup final to be played in Helsinki on Saturday. But as Sunday is all about the mothers, I guess I'll be helping my kids prepare a treat for their mum as well.
That's sweet. What about you, Mikko? Any special plans? Have you got Mother's Day duty as well?
Yes, we are planning to go see at the centre of Helsinki on Kaivopihat. There will be a new statue shown, which is a gift to the 150-year-old University of Helsinki Students Union, designed by artist Björn Wexström, who also designed Princess Leia's jewelry for the original Star Wars film.
Really?
Wow.
That's news to me. I guess I've got to read up on it.
That was announced just a few hours ago.
Okay, good to know. That sounds fantastic. But anyway, as I said before, that's all from us this week. I'm Denise Wall, and my co-presenter was Egan Richardson. Thank you to our special guest, Mikko Kiesilainen. Thanks for joining us. Our producer today was Zina Iovino. Reporters were Ronan Brown and Eddie D. Hawkins. And our sound engineer was Marco Vierikko. Thanks for joining us once again, and don't forget to subscribe, get in touch, and even leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. You can stay up to date on our news at wiley.fi/news and listen to previous editions of this podcast at wiley.fi/allpointsnorth.
You've been listening to All Points North, a podcast produced by Yle News, a unit of the Finnish Broadcasting Company. For daily news from Finland in English, head to yle.fi/news and follow us online at Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening to Yle News.